Yay, podcasting. Woo-hoo! Who here likes podcasts?
I like to cast my pod.
I got to go.
Pretty much.
All right. 3, 2, 1. Let's jam. Yo, yo, yo. What's up? Welcome to Nerd AF, a podcast dedicated to all things nerdy in the world of comics, TV, movie, and video games. I'm Hugh Johnson with my co-host Brad Bogus and
hello,
Richard
hello.
Williams.
Hello, hello.
Our special guest today from DU, Professor Andrew Matrenka.
That's right. Thank you. You got that right. Well done.
DU is Denver University for those of you who are not in Denver.
Oh, yeah. That's right. I should probably
clarify. We do things backwards here. So, like, CU is the University of Colorado in Boulder, and DU is the University of Denver.
There you go.
So we got a lot of things to talk about today. We're going to talk about A Wrinkle in Time, Star Wars Rebels finale, the Donald Trump administration and video games, and the new Super Smash Bros. Trailer for the Nintendo Switch coming out in 2018.
I'm really excited
about that. So, guys, let's just start it off here. Oh, and if you hear me squealing for any reason, it is NFL free agency, and I am just marking out right now. So, just to let you guys know, I'm really excited about that.
I know a ton about that.
I know that's not nerdy, but
me too.
Right on.
All right. Well, Brad, Wrinkle in Time is all yours. So, talk to us about it,
man. All right. So, first off, I just want to say that, like, I was a huge Wrinkle in Time fan. I read the book as a kid. It was one of my favorite children's books, as it was with many different children who read this book. It was just such a creative, imaginative book written for kids that I re-explored as an adult. And I got to say, it's not a fucking adult book, right? So, like, it's a really great children's novel. But if you're, like, into, you know, space travel and time and quantum physics, like, this isn't going to hold up to an adult's need for quantum travel, time travel, all that stuff, right? So, like, it was a really good book. I read it as an adult. I was like, oh, well, I remember that way more fondly as a kid than I had just experienced it. So that being said, I just want to say, like, you know, the reviews have been coming back about Wrinkle in Time, and despite all of the hype and all of the excitement I have for the movie, when you look at the basis of the reviews, because, you know, it's being, like, talked about how they're not really doing that well on Rotten Tomatoes, and, like, you know, just across the board, there seems to be a constituency of people who hate the movie and a constituency of people who seem to love the movie, but due to its, like, social aspects, right? So it's like, well, the movie's not perfect, but we're really happy that it was such an achievement for inclusivity and diversity in casting and all this stuff. The majority of the negative feedback is all a whole bunch of bullshit, in my opinion, and is really because you get a bunch of adults who are like, this isn't an adult movie. This is really just a kid's film. And I'm like, no shit. Did you read the fucking book? Right, it's a kid's book.
Right.
So, you know, I'm personally really excited to go see it. I still have not yet seen it. I wanted to go see it this weekend, but we didn't get a chance to. But, you know, what I've seen so far, if people are, like, thinking about discounting this film, I would just say, like, go see it for yourself. We all know reviews don't necessarily sum up the exact feeling of a movie.
Right.
And don't go into this movie expecting an adult film. You know, go into it like you would Moana, and you'll be probably extremely blown away.
And plenty of critics have misjudged movies that have, maybe not misjudged, but movies they've given negative reviews to movies that
we're celebrating 20 years of Big Lebowski. Critics hate
yeah,
it.
Yeah.
yeah.
Hate it. Right.
See, so, you can't hate Big Lebowski.
Exactly. Not anymore. Right. Not right now you can't, but at the time it was not a popular flick.
Like
exactly. It's a cult movie.
Yeah, it's a cult movie. Now it's an accepted popular
flick. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's also, Wrinkle in Time's going up against a big box office right now.
Right.
Black Panther. Right.
Well, yeah. That's what I can contribute to that.
No. Well, you got Black Panther just crossed the $1 billion mark. And so, you know, I guess for some reason, entertainment reviewers think, well, there's one black movie and now there's another black movie and they have to be compared against one another.
Right.
As if The Wrinkle in Time was ever going to perform like Black Panther. It's a different offering to the world.
We need to celebrate that. I think, first of all, we totally need to celebrate that. I've been watching it on, the reviews. I haven't seen the movie yet, but I've been watching it on Collider Video and a couple of other video podcasts. And they kind of fall in line with what I think about movies and what have you. And Collider is right there. Mm. Beautiful. It's gorgeous. And it's well acted. But the story has holes in it. Yep. But what movie doesn't? I mean, even Black Panther. I love Black Panther. It has holes in it. But that's what they keep saying. That's what they keep harping on.
Yeah.
The story has so many holes in it, and yeah. it's not consistent, and the pace is bad. So
I kind of feel like they didn't read the fucking book.
No, a lot of them did. Actually, all the people in Collider, they actually read the books. Yeah. That's why I love looking at them, because they're like, it's not like the book in this way.
Yeah.
But,
and I know it is divergent. Like, some of the reviews have said, like, this is divergent from the book in a way. And Ava DuVernay made some choices that weren't exactly, like, canon to the book. But, you know, I mean, but everybody does that.
Yeah.
Everybody does that.
Everyone takes liberties. Yeah. Absolutely.
And I mean, how many, like, you know, nerdy, like, comics or sci-fi come based off a children's book?
Right.
You
know, like, talking about, you know, you look at Lord of the Rings.
Right.
That's a huge book. You
the
know,
Hobbit,
and then
where
you
that
look
came
at comics
from.
And they try and make it make sense, you know? And
yeah.
So, Star Wars, even there's not a lot of, like, you know, real physics to that.
Yeah, no doubt.
I don't know. Like, I think that it's worth a shot for people to just go out and see the film and celebrate it. I mean, one of the cool things about it, from a diversity standpoint, is that this is the first time in history we've seen two directors of color occupy spots number one and number two in the box office.
That's amazing.
Paying Disney at the same time.
Right.
Both Disney movies, by the way.
Disney's the real winner.
How did Disney turn around, by the way? Remember, they used to be like this conservative evil empire,
right.
In my mind, at least. I don't know
They still are. and I love it, and I take my kids there, but it's still...
They just saw the capitalism in it, right? Yeah. Yeah, I think that's fucking incredible. It's kind of mind-blowing. And Richard, what were you saying earlier about Ava DuVernay?
She was up to direct Black Panther and decided not to do it for whatever reason, and then Coogler got it.
Mm.
And I'm not mad at her.
No, but look, it's not like she did something bad either.
I'll
like
just say
she's
about
number two in the box office.
What do you think, Pam?
No doubt, but they're both dominating. Like, that's something really important to say about, I mean, obviously, like, we're going to harp on the fact that, like, diversity matters when we talk about these subjects.
Right, right, right.
But look at the numbers. Diversity actually matters. And, you know, regardless of what a number of critics think about Wrinkle in Time, they accept a lot of mediocre bullshit in some white entertainment. And I think what has happened here, regardless of what the critics think, I'm just ready to put my money into it. You know what I mean? Like, it might get smashed on Rotten Tomatoes. That's fine. I don't care. I still want to give them my money. Because if I'm going to give my money to something, I want it to at least go towards some sort of message I believe in.
Exactly.
And while that is also some of the feedback that negative reviews have about it, is like, oh, this is more of a politically correct film than it is a good film.
Please.
I think, go fuck yourself on that subject. That's kind of how I feel about it.
Man,
I'm going to put my money into it, and I don't care.
Let's just talk about it. If you build it, they will come.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like this, like Black Panther. I know I keep harping on Black Panther. I love it. But like, seriously, you build something like that and you put diversity out there, a lot of people are like, oh, no one's going to come see this. It's like a black lead. I don't think it's going to work. It's a black girl lead. It's not going to work.
Right.
It's a woman lead. It's not going to work. That's not true. People want to see themselves represented on film.
Yeah.
Not just film, video games, all of it, comic books. Everything.
Right.
Children's books. I mean, there's an article in the Sunday Times yesterday about how kids, all right, we want to read more than just MLK all the time. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
All Harriet Tubman.
Yeah.
Like, there's more than just
there's
these icons. And that was a good opinion piece, actually.
Mm-hmm. That's
really
a great
good.
Point. Like, there's more to black history, black culture than
civil
rights. Starting in at civil rights and slavery. Like, it's ridiculous.
Like, absolutely.
Way more
all
to
of
it.
Right. And that's why Coco's doing so well. And there's another
Moana.
Disney movie.
Moana. Yeah.
The Shape of Water.
Another Moana. Yeah.
The Shape of Water.
That's not Disney, luckily.
Not Disney.
Yeah, I don't think Disney's going to put that in.
If the only thing that we can talk about diversity is Disney movies, we're fucked.
That's another.
But, movie. I mean, if they're the ones who have to lead in the space, fucking someone's got to lead, right? At least they're doing it in force. I mean, that's a big tidal wave of influence that they can now have, and seems to be wielding itself pretty well.
And they're doing it in Star Wars too, which we're going to get to later.
Do you think we'll get a white MRA cut of The Wrinkle in Time,
just like Star Wars? No, I mean, like, when's the last time you've seen a sci-fi or fantasy flick star a black
the
girl?
Smart comes in.
Right. Right. Well, let's talk about Lord of the Rings. Where were the black characters in Lord of the Rings?
Exactly.
You know?
That
was
a sore spot for me.
Make Middle Earth
world.
Great again.
Right.
Black people are not orcs.
We end on that point.
Yeah. The almighty bell. All right, let's go to Star Wars Rebels.
Something totally different. Another Disney movie.
Disney franchise. This was on Disney XD.
Yes. Yes.
Or Reddit. The series finale recently aired. And we're talking all about the series finale. It's got all of nerddom.
Have we all watched this show? It's like four seasons of it?
I did.
Richard is our resident fanboy.
Okay. But so spoilers are okay?
We are. So just in general, it's really hard to have meaningful conversations about this type of stuff without spoilers. So just heads up, if you're listening, you might want to fast forward a little bit. We are going to talk about Rebels in a spoiler sensitive,
I can keep it general
conversation.
We're going to spoil the shit out of this.
Yeah, I don't really know how you have this conversation without spoiling it.
Get used to it. Merry Christmas. Yeah. That's your present.
Anyway, here's a fair warning.
If you're also, we say we're talking about something, we're spoiling
it. And what totally rock are you living under? This is really important to talk about. That's why I'm here today.
Yeah.
Exclusively.
If you don't want to be spoiled,
the rest of this is way outside of my pay.
This shit's on you.
I'm going to, like you said, I'm going to spoil some shit.
Did you watch all of Rebels?
I've consumed it. I'm deep into like the Full of Sith podcast, doing like postmortems on it. I've read a lot about it. My buddy has been talking to me about it. I have a friend I geek out with hard on this. I'm a huge fan.
So I'm interested just to hear from you and then Richard on this. In terms of the Star Wars canon, where does Rebels live in your mind? Like, is it a strong entry? Is it solid canon? I mean, I know that there's elements of the story that have been considered it, but do you feel like Rebels has earned its place in the top placement of Star Wars stories? What do you think? I'll start with Andrew.
Go for
do you
it.
Mind?
Yeah, because he's our guest.
Go for it.
No. Well, right. I don't want to steal your thunder. No. So right now, like, to me, everything has to almost compare to, like, Rogue One, just because it was so good, and it was – if we're rebooting an actual franchise, we don't do that with Force Awakens. We sort of do it with Last Jedi. But Rogue One really shows that Star Wars can do really great storytelling within the sort of hero's journey narrative arc. But when we see with Star Wars Rebels is taking, like – the whole thing and like wrapping it up in this beautiful package, and the way it ends really was meaningful to me, and I'm happy to dig into it, but it's up there for me some of the best Star Wars that there is. Absolutely.
Wow.
And this someone who like saw Empire Strikes Back in the theater as a young boy in the early 80s, like, this has been my whole life. I love this cast so much.
I just want to make something clear.
So much growth.
Better than the movies? Like, some of the best Star Wars above the movies?
Probably storytelling-wise, right?
Revenge of the Sith, last half hour, maybe some of the battle scenes in Clone Wars, the cartoon stuff of the Clone Wars, the very best. There's the Mortis arc, which makes an appearance in Rebels, which just blows me into 1,000 pieces when that happens. But then there's some other things that happen that tie in from the Clone Wars animated series, which is 6 seasons of very slick digital animation. This has more stripped down animation.
Yeah.
Ralph McQuarrie's drawings, like character development, the growth of this cast.
Of Ezra. It was all centered around Ezra.
I was crying at the end of this movie.
Too. It was crazy. God. I was like, no!
it was gripping. The last couple hours of those, so good.
I just love that it takes place between Return of the Sith and A New Hope.
Yeah, Revenge of the Sith and A New Hope. That's what it's saying. And Rogue One is actually, because Hera, Syndulla, General Syndulla, is in Rogue One.
Yes.
Right.
And so Rogue is Chopper. And you see Chopper, who is Dave Filoni. That's a major spoiler for everyone. Like, Dave
Filoni,
is Chopper.
Yes, he's the voice of Chopper.
Yeah,
I love
amazing.
That. But like, one of my favorite things was I just, like, a lot of people were like, oh, it should have tied in more to more Star Wars stuff.
So much tie-ins.
I know. And I'm like, evidently you haven't seen them all. And then my other thing is this. It's like, all right, well, let's just go there. It didn't tie it in enough. But this was about one group.
Right.
And it's about how they grew as a group and turned into a family.
Right.
Yeah.
And that was so powerful, especially the end where Ezra, like, can I spoil?
We already dropped it.
We could talk about the final moment there.
Yeah. Well, I mean, just like when, Ezra ended up, going away and disappearing of that. And then it played on cue, like his video thing. He goes, "You're my family. Mm-hmm. I love you."
Yeah.
And then also the death of Kanan. I always say his name wrong. But, that was huge.
Yeah.
I mean,
losing your master,
right?
Like the
and
whole
then,
thing.
What is it, like, worlds within
world that? Within worlds, where they do the tie time travel, yeah, which has never been right, part it's of never been done. Scene.
Yeah, that's a totally new addition.
Never had like a time travel third, fourth dimensional thing with Star Wars.
And it was so brief, too, because it makes you wonder, like, did they like want to introduce something new without changing the universe around it that has already been set up? Like, how
we were talking about this earlier. Go ahead.
It kind of reminded me of in Force Awakens, like where the planet Luke is on.
Right.
Like it's so locked away. It's just like the technology is so great here. How do you just not find this guy?
Right.
There almost has to be some sort of mysticism behind
there
it.
There is.
That's kind of the vibe I got from this world within worlds.
Go ahead. Well, cool, no, the first cool three movies, you know, not the actual ones, but like the first three, you know, with him becoming Darth Vader.
Yeah, one, prequels, two, three.
Yeah.
Well, they tried to take out all the mysticism and do metachlorines, and I'm like,
stop that shit.
Stop it. It's like hated that mystical move. And it's like, tough. Don't take that away from me.
Right. This is my philosophy. This is my worldview.
Right. Like, everything can't be explained.
But you know, while I at first, because
you
like,
have the kid at the end.
The idea of like exclusive Jedi powers or the attainment of some sort of Buddhist level of study that gets you to the point where you have these powers is like so exclusive. And there's something actually kind of compelling about there being no class barriers to being a Jedi.
I love that.
You know, so like absolutely. I used to be pretty anti-midichlorians. I can easily argue it. I think I can also, and with more emotion, argue the other part now because there's some sort of equity to it now. Like, you know, the Jedi is not locked away from everybody and only, you know, this sort of sense of royalty or Ezra coming from the Skywalker bloodline. Like, you know what I mean? It's a blue blood Jedi versus, you know, an everyman Jedi. And I think that's kind of cool.
Well, the other thing that I love that, you know, kind of that they brought to this is that not everyone has to be a Jedi. You could be Force sensitive.
Yeah.
Totally.
Right. Like in Rogue One, you know, that was beautiful. That was absolutely beautiful. It's like, you don't have to be a Jedi, but you can still channel into it to some degree, you know, and use it however you want.
As long as you're not flying through fucking space after you've died. I just want to point out, Leia in space was some bullshit.
Are you talking about Leia?
Space was some bullshit.
You have got some.
Mary Poppins.
I'm okay with
the Mary Poppins. If you've never seen, like, there's this YouTube channel, like, How It Should Have Ended.
Oh, yeah.
And the How It Should Have Ended for Last Jedi.
Oh,
so
I need to watch that.
You've got to watch it. It's worth 8 minutes. But the scene specifically with Leia.
Oh, my God.
Their take on that, so amazing.
I literally audibly in the theater was like, oh, my God.
For fuck's sake.
Exactly.
Well, let's talk about Last Jedi here a little bit.
I was a little shocked. Yeah.
You just said you enjoyed the dichotomy between the blue blood Jedi and the everyman Jedi.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Like, talk about Rey's heritage. I know a lot of people are upset that she doesn't really come from anywhere special, right? Like, that's the implication.
Well, maybe. Kylo could have lied.
Right.
He could be confused.
He could be confused.
I have a hard time with like the next stuff foreshadowing that. I really like talking about what I know and can wrap my head around like right now because there's so much expansion with hiring Favreau and then a new set of trilogies. So and a new another cartoon like Rebels coming out. Yeah. There's just so much Star Wars content that they're going to be picking so many disparate elements. I don't really know where we go.
Ahsoka.
I really don't.
What's
going to happen with Ahsoka?
Exactly, Ahsoka.
General Syndulla. Now that we don't have Leia, is Hera going to take over in Episode 9?
That
talking
last
about
shot
that?
In The Last Jedi, like, is that foreshadowing for the next whole, you know, entry into the series, or is that the setup for the next trilogy? You never really know. Right. What's really interesting, I think, about the crossover between Rebels and The Last Jedi is this idea that Rebels planted a seed that the next series might explore the Knights of Ren. That Hera and Kanan's son is actually one of the OG Knights of Ren. Because he would be in age, I think, slightly older or slightly younger than Luke, I believe. Maybe slightly younger than Luke, but only marginally. Apparently there might be some familiar relation with the Solos. I don't know. It's just sort of speculation. But it was right. In the last 2 minutes of the Rebels episode is like this sort of soliloquy by Sabine. Yeah. Right. And so it's either her and Ahsoka teaming up going looking for Ezra or...
Oh, that's a show right there.
Yeah, totally. Well, anything with Ahsoka. It's so interesting to me that like you've got these two animated series, the Clone Wars, which you mentioned, is sort of faulty in a certain regard. Right. But Ahsoka is like one of the most loved characters in the canon now, even though she's never appeared in any of the films.
No. Right.
Which is super interesting. I hope she does.
She better.
But like, how do you explore it without exploring the time between Rogue One and, you know what I mean? Like, that's really the only...
Time jump. I mean, let's look at
Oh, that's right.
Because they actually said that, and I love that, God, the clone warrior. He was on Endor, the Battle of Endor.
Rex.
Rex
was all the way through Endor.
And they actually showed him.
Yeah.
Like, if you watch that again,
yep.
He's one of the speed guys. And because you saw what he was wearing, like, at one point.
Right.
It was a speeder outfit.
Yep, yep.
And I was like, oh, my God, it happened. So,
yep.
How old is Yuno Syndulla, like, the son with the green hair? I mean, he'll be in his late 30s. Yeah, so yeah, he'll probably, like.
If we play that out.
Okay, all right. So that, like, totally makes sense.
Force Awakens, or through Last Jedi.
Okay. Yeah. All right, that makes sense.
So yeah. There's a lot of good stuff going on in the novels, too. I'm finishing up Bloodlines, where you learn about when the Resistance starts, the First Order starts. That's cool. There's the whole Aftermath trilogy, which is Battle of Jakku, and how those guys like Hux and those people take off. So right now, I can talk smack about Disney, they're doing a lot with cross-platform stuff with these.
Right.
That does require you to be both a casual fan, oh, I'm going to go check this out, or you can nerd out hard in a way that has never been possible.
And now they've given themselves the ability to insert canon. So this whole idea of the world between worlds, you actually can now play with time and space.
I hope they do that sparingly.
In the future and go back to... Yeah, I do too. Yeah, because they could fuck a whole lot of shit up with that idea. But
they gave themselves some leeway because it's only the temples.
Yeah.
It's not like you could just do it.
Right.
You know, it's like you have to go to a temple.
Which a lot have been destroyed, hopefully. Right.
Yep.
Exactly.
And if we get a lot of exploration into the Knights of Ren, looking at the timelines, like, all of the Jedis have to die before A New Hope, with the exception of Luke and Obi-Wan for the most part. So at some point, Ahsoka and Ezra have to die or be removed from the universe,
right?
For the story to have some continuity. So Disney now has this opportunity to sort of play with that and bring Ahsoka potentially into the live action films.
They can.
Or take the next animated series and focus just on the Knights of Ren themselves, which I think is cool.
Well, no one really knows where Ezra and Thrawn are, right?
Like,
no.
Dude. By the way, one of the coolest villains of all time, I think. Like, one of my favorites. He's so chill. That dude is the chillest, most confident villain I've ever seen.
I read all those Timothy Zahn books when I was a kid, and, like, the fact that Rebels brought him into play was genius. They really got some core fans, like people like myself. I was little. I didn't know how I felt about Rebels for the first season, and by the end, I was like, this is really good.
Yeah.
Really
see, I didn't even get into it in the first season because I expected it was going to be a kids show.
That's what people still say about the Clone Wars when I tell people, like, you have like 1,000 plus whatever hours you can watch of Star Wars and you're not doing it and it's free on Netflix. Well, free on Netflix right now. Like, you could binge six plus seasons on this and like, you're missing out.
Yeah.
Like, I've seen
to close
all,
a lot of loops.
And I start with Rebels at the very beginning and everyone's like, what you say is like, oh, it's kiddie. I'm like, I don't care. I'm going to watch it.
Yeah.
The animation, the Macquarie drawings were perfect.
Like, I actually really dig the animation. A lot of people shat on it and was like, it's not nearly as cool as Clone Wars animation. I liked it.
I had to get used to it the first season. Then I was like, okay, I'm fine with it. Because I'm like, oh, it's not like, it's kind of like Clone Wars.
I like the tones of it. I think it felt a little bit more grounded than the animation from Clone Wars.
Okay.
For sure. Yeah. I actually even liked their characterization of Ahsoka more, even though it's essentially the same character with the same style. Right, yeah.
For sure.
Oh, my God. When she showed up.
At the end.
I mean, no. Like, when she first
showed up. Oh, in the show. Yeah. In the season.
Right. I, like, squealed.
Me too.
I was just like, oh, my God, she's alive. Thank you, Jesus.
For sure.
I loved her.
I'm like, what happened to her? So they did a nice job.
So Thrawn was, from the books even, one of your favorite villains?
Yeah, like Timothy Zahn's Heir to the Empire series, if you look up those, they're considered legends now, Star Wars legends. But it's still the fact that they mined that as part of the EU for this, I think, is really a powerful use of content, if nothing else.
I just love that they made him canon.
Yeah.
Because I never thought that would happen. I, like, dabbled in it and read a little bit, but
makes me happy.
Yeah. I mean,
No, Lars Mikkelsen, who played him, I think just played him fucking brilliantly. And I don't know anything about the backstory. I never read the books, but he's the guy who played the sort of Vladimir Putin character in House of Cards. And he just has this cool, confident.
Petrov?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, he plays Petrov. And he's the one who does Thrawn's voice. And it's just, dude, he's so silky, smooth, cool for a fucking supervillain. It's wonderful.
And it's always daunting to bring like a sleeper character that's so, like, well-respected into the canon and be able to do it right.
Right.
Like, that's a huge plus.
I agree.
No doubt. I want to say something controversial. I want to see if this lands or not. I think Sabine is a way cooler character than Boba Fett.
What?
Well, she's more built up.
There's she's an actual more, character.
Right. More, right.
You know more about her.
I don't know. Boba Fett's pretty badass.
Yeah. Right. See, this is what I want to understand, because I've always been, more of a Sith and Jedi android fan. Okay. I've never really understood the fanaticism of Boba Fett quite yet. Yeah. Other than he just had a cool fucking
cool
style.
Costume,
he got a cool costume, right? But, like, I never understood the fanaticism, the cult fanaticism around the character. Right. So, like, it's not a character. It's just a dude in a suit. He hardly ever even says anything throughout the fucking movies.
He has grappling hooks.
Yeah, so?
And a potential missile.
The jetpack,
back here in a backpack.
Yeah, okay.
I still have my original Bubba Fett, like, Kenner action doll. And so, like, yes. I don't know. There's just something about Bubba Fett that he was mysterious and, you know, he kept
his ship is really cool.
Yeah, Slave One. Right. And then we get the whole prequel stuff with him, which is fine. But
Django's
how did you like that?
It's a little clunky.
I think it just totally made the character kind of lame.
Well,
you got to explore his youth. You got to explore his youth in Clone Wars a little bit.
It's just too easy. It's like, yeah, you got your head cut off by a Jedi. Now you hit all the Jedis.
Right.
Okay, cool.
Do you know what I mean? Like, okay, now, yeah, right. It's like, oh, now I get it.
He's a real hero's journey.
I really like your armor. I really like your Mandalorian armor.
Right. I like what the Clone Wars did with Mandalorians. And so, I mean,
I do too.
That part, Boba Fett always lives for me outside of, like, the, I don't know.
The Black Saber? Come on.
The Dark Saber. Yeah. Pre Vizsla and all that stuff. That stuff's cool.
I got one last thing to say about it. Just personally, I mean, you guys can keep talking about it all you want. But one last thing I had an opinion on when it came to the Rebels season finale, series finale, which is what the fuck with the space whales? Like, that's
exactly.
The worst Deus Ex Machina I've ever seen. Fucking space whales, like, they're going to all
I'm
of a sudden show up and destroy Star Destroyers.
I'm not mad at them.
I think it's kind of cool. They're just going to bump their head into a Star Destroyer and kill them.
I think it's kind of cool that there's things, like, out in space.
Sure.
Because there's space worms already, and, like, the fact that they have hyperspace abilities is a little bit of a stretch. But there was, like, this amazing joke on the Full of Sith podcast that I have to repeat. It's such a dad joke. Where it's like, so you imagine there's two of the stormtroopers inside one of those Star Destroyers, and, like, they look outside the windows. They're like, yo, those space whales are some Moby Dicks. Wah, 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 wah. That's kind of, when I heard that joke, I was like, yep, I kind of feel that way. Like, they're cool, but they're also kind of corny, just like
that's what happens when
that's
you enter fucking
that's
space
a dad
whales.
Joke.
Is you get a dad joke.
That is good lore to me.
Yeah.
You know, as opposed to maybe midichlorians and stuff like
that. I liked it, but I liked the dad
joke. That's
like
good
too.
Lore. They inspire hyperspace travel, that
they're
sort of thing.
Sensitive.
Right.
Exactly.
I like that Ezra used them as part of his, like, sort of grand strategy.
Like the wolves.
I mean, the wolves were fucking cool. To a certain extent, there's like this whole thing that I have when it comes to these types of new introductions, which is really what gets so tricky about Star Wars, is like, where the fuck have they been this whole time? All of a sudden, there's hyper-traveling space whales that can just come bump their head into a Star Destroyer. Where the fuck have they been? Like, why haven't we found the space whales already?
This is a chance to, a platform to explore that.
Exactly. And some of these people really take Rian Johnson to task with, like, the teleporting thing, and, like, then he, like, picks out the book that's on his shelf, and he says,
that was hilarious.
That thread of tweets where he's like, yeah, it's in the book, guys. You know, like, I didn't write the book, and so, like, it's in the,
I love it.
You know what I mean? So, like, there
the
might
Homer
be
Simpson
the
meme,
right. Yeah,
like,
the Homer Simpson going into the thing. So, like, Brett, I don't know what
so
to wrecked. Say. Like,
yeah,
is it there, or is the it book. Like just like when people are like the first time? It's like, oh, there's no. How would you shoot down a whole Death Star? It's like, well, Luke did it in the first when he took the thing off his face and. Just talk to – okay, never mind. You know,
right.
Those
you
are the times where it's sort of hard for us as fans
that,
like, we're so indebted to, like, our interpretation of it. But then it's like some of it's, like, way outside of our realm of knowledge.
And that's the nice thing about these Disney movies is they're taking it kind of away from, like, the main arc of, you know, the Skywalkers and all that.
Right.
And, like, expanding the universe not only through, the main story but also through the side movies, Solo, Rogue One.
We'll see about Solo.
You don't like it?
I don't know. We'll see. I don't prognosticate about it.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
That's also a really hard movie to fucking land on.
But Donald Glover. Hopefully Donald Glover.
Donald Glover's
hopefully it's Donald Glover's movie.
Yeah,
I just have to say one thing, because I've been watching, like, Collider Video and a couple of other things, and other video podcasts, and they all love Donald Glover as Lando Calrissian.
Yeah, me too. And I'm getting
some
sort of words.
I don't know about Han Solo.
Right.
Yeah. I love the Wookiee.
Right.
I mean, Han Solo has got to be one of the harder characters to be able to pull off. I think Donald Glover as Lando is obviously a brilliant casting choice, and we know that he's got the talent and the chops to pull it off.
Yeah.
Who the fuck is Solo?
Yeah, we'll
don't
see.
Really know if he's got we'll that. See. You know what I mean? I mean, you got to have, like, Like, even I don't even think Harrison Ford could replay Solo the way he played Solo the first time. Like, such audacious swagger.
He's like, kill me, kill me.
Well, I don't want to do this anymore.
But right. New Solo was an old Solo.
I think he should die in the third scene.
Yeah. Lightsaber to the chest, I'm done.
I don't know if you guys noticed the Solo Leia scenes in The Force Awakens, but they were weak. Neither of them could reprise those roles the way they originally did it. There was that vigor to the first time they did it. You know what I mean? Like, he had to recreate the swagger. He already had the swagger in the first movies.
Right,
you know,
right.
Nobody knew that those things were going to be seen, so he just kind of threw himself out there. I don't think you can redo that.
They jumped on each other in the first movies. So yeah, they kind of had like that. I'm gonna get you again, girl.
Yeah.
And they were a thing too.
Like, but you know,
could have been better.
Right.
I buy it. That was a fair point about the space whales. I think maybe if they just didn't have like so much power, it would have been a little
bit more acceptable.
Pretty
powerful.
Maybe a little struggle. I mean, a bump with your head into a Star Destroyer and you blow up the Star Destroyer that's pretty fucking powerful whale that can drive through hyperspace. I mean, that's
a good point.
It's a weird thing, but yeah, I agree with you. I mean, yeah, you're right. I haven't read the books. There's a lot there. I thought Luke was supposed to go to the dark side, and it pissed me off in The Last Jedi that he didn't. So,
that's a good point.
You know what I mean?
I read some of the comic books off and on from what was Dark Horse?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep.
Dark Horse. That's about it.
And they have some new the Vader comics are pretty good. I can geek out on those too. But that's fun. Showing
I do have to say the last thing though. I loved the Osaka. Thank you. And Vader fight.
Oh my god.
Yes.
Yeah, season two or whatever, season finale.
Yeah. That
was some of the best.
And then the last season or the season finale, they showed what actually happened, and I was like, "Wait a minute, you can't do this."
With his mask all broken up,
that was great.
Is she dead?
Dude, I know.
That was heavy duty for me, for sure.
That really was, because you don't ever see his mask injured throughout the entire films until it comes off at the very end of the original trilogy.
She just saw him and was like, "Oh my god!"
Yeah, it was heavy.
Yeah.
It hurt her so much.
The fact that he just pulls her out.
Like, fuck that. We're gonna save you real quick. Yeah. That was really cool. I'm interested to see what they do with that, hopefully, in the future, sparingly.
Yeah. Yeah.
Too much Deus Ex Machina?
Yeah, I like a linear thing.
Yeah. Yeah. I can dig it.
You don't want to retcon too much. Boom. Thank you for indulging me on that. We went deeper than maybe you were.
It's all good. We're all really big Star Wars geeks, so it's plenty to talk about there.
Next up, Donald Trump and video games. So following the Parkland shooting, the Trump administration just had a meeting last Thursday, I want to say, regarding violence in video games and how we can possibly help out school violence by, you know, regulating video games. One of the talks was regulating it kind of like tobacco and alcohol. So I just wanted to first off go around the table and just like, let's talk about some of our like most violent moments playing video games. Like what like stood out to you, and then we can get into the meat of whether or not this is like a real solution to gun violence or not.
Well, the first time I remember seeing blood in games was Mortal Kombat on Sega Genesis.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
Blood code ABACABB. Still remember that shit.
Sure.
And I was gripped. I was like, whoa, this is so fucking cool. That was like my first violent experience in really like finding something new and sort of, I don't know if I want to say special because that sounds almost twisted, but something special in this level of hyper violence, I guess. I do remember there was a game I played, I guess this was around 2003 to 2005-ish, called Manhunt. Do you remember this game?
I remember the name.
Real fucked up game where it's basically the premise is you are an unwilling actor in a snuff film that is being directed by someone who has like control over a city block and cameras everywhere and hired thugs and goons that all have these different, they're all trying to kill you.
Right.
And you have to kill them in the most violent way possible for you to like earn points in the game to move forward or they get rid of you. And what I mean like is as violent as possible, it actually turned my stomach to play the game after a while. Like, I was like, I can't do this anymore. You know, like, grotting wires where you, like, you know, sever someone's head by, like, sawing it off with your knee in their back. Like, really fucking violent shit that it was too much. Like, so, you know, from Mortal Kombat to that, I've sort of experienced all of this hyper-violence.
Spectrum.
Yeah. personally found a place where I was like, that's too much.
For me, it's 2006. Like, the first time I saw Gears of War, you, like, chainsaw someone in half. You guys played that game? You know, you just have this gun with a chainsaw bayonet. And you go, right down in, like, right down the center. But the real one that stood out to me was Call of Duty Modern Warfare 2. Mm-hmm. It was actually in the montage the Trump administration showed at the beginning of the meeting to kind of highlight violence video games. The level's called No Russian, and basically you go around as a terrorist to an airport, and you just shoot a bunch of civilians.
Holy shit.
Like, literally, like, the game had, like, disclaimers and warnings before the level, and I was, like, playing it, and this is, like, post 9/11.
Yep.
So this, like, this is hitting home.
Oh,
like,
no doubt.
This is, like, particularly some crazy sensitive. Shit. And so that one for me was just like, wow, maybe we went just too far there.
Yeah.
Right. And it's just like, That's you my found your too kind far of point. Manhunt.
Yeah, exactly.
Level experience. Richard, anything on your end?
The first violent like game that scared the hell out of me, it's really not that hard to do, is Resident Evil. Veronica's Code.
Ooh. Oh, not the first one. Because everyone always talks about that dog in the hallway in the first
one. I'm like the psycho. I'm like with the shotgun. I'm like, you're dead. So, like, you don't. But like when you see like something like crazy turn into like a huge monster in front of you, it's like, I don't know how I'm going to kill it. So, like, my friends are there screaming. It's like, just run. You know, that was the first thing. But I am officially playing the Evil Within 2. I played Evil Within 1.
Right.
And right now, I can't even play it in the dark. Yeah. It is so violent. It is just like, I mean, it's like shotgun to the head, zombie, and then, like, you got to kill other people to get to this. And I'm like, oh, man, this is too much. And I have to take a break from it.
Yep.
Walk away, go eat dinner, and then come back if it's not at night. And then I'll start again.
And Evil Within was one of the games that they talked about. Right.
That was also in the montage, the first one.
Yeah.
It's tough with video games and tying it directly to violence like that. I mean, I with the modules that I teach my students on sort of contemporary issues in digital culture specific to gaming in my media studies classes and units, it's tough because they focus a lot on the gender and misogyny, which are I think really important to talk about. And but then there's also, of course, like I actually exited video games before first person shooters became very popular. Yeah. And that was never I do remember Mortal Kombat, and that is but that's like a desensitized kind of violence where first person shooters and sort of the social networking of video games is in some ways a net positive because you're creating communities, people are able to like collaborate and create digital cultures that for some people that's really great. That's a great outlet. But is it going to make someone go walk in the street and go shoot somebody? No. I don't. That is where there's not enough research, number one, and well, it's not the answer to the larger gun problem.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, if we're talking about it more in like the news of the day, Parkland did not happen because of violent video games.
Exactly.
I don't think that's a fair thing.
And let me reframe the question here. Like, a lot of people kind of have that. Kind of have that reaction that, okay, like, this is kind of a deflection. We should be talking about guns.
Right.
But also, like, people might highlight the fact that in a lot of these high-profile mass shootings, the culprits are mostly men.
Young white men.
You know?
Yes.
And if we're going to talk about changing a culture of men, if we're going to talk about changing men, do we owe it to ourselves to talk about violence in video games? Yes.
And we do. Yeah, for sure. And I have little boys.
Masculinity.
Yeah. Right.
It's horrible.
Well, but
and what does that look like?
I think there's a separate conversation happening. There's the violence aspect of games, which can have any expression. And then there's the misogynistic aspect of culture in games that can express itself violently.
Right.
You know, you look at games like Grand Theft Auto and, you know, you can basically run over and shoot anybody. Right. You can pick up a prostitute, put them in the car.
Kids don't play those video games.
Right.
And there's not the kind of man I'm trying to raise.
There's a culture there.
Yeah.
Why will you stop him from playing that?
It's stupid. It's not enriching content.
Right.
You know, I mean, I'm a media educator. We have a Leap TV, but they can play sports games, racing games, fine. But when we go to like even the arcade and they want to shoot the things, I'm like, stop, not with the duck shooting game.
Wow.
We're not going to do that.
Okay? Yeah. Right.
I'd rather have you race a motorcycle. I don't know. That's just me.
Sure.
How about fighting monsters? It's not real. I mean,
yeah, we do some monster fighting and like Spider-Man like throws some web things, you know, like in the basic games. But you also like to pass the level, you have to do like a math problem or like a word afford a replacement.
Okay. Sure.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, yeah.
These are young. I mean, my kids are still in elementary school.
Right. Oh, yeah. Okay.
Right?
Absolutely.
So my kids are 8 years old as the oldest. So I don't know. That's just me choosing that kind of parenting right now. Maybe it'll evolve. If he wants to play Star Wars games, okay, fine.
Right.
You know? So do I sound like a hypocrite? Because there is violence. There's shooting. Sure. But it's also like, I mean, we're talking about like galactic warfare. Like, study the Civil War if you want to understand the really gruesome nature of war and right. what it does to people.
And there's some games that I've seen that explore like
real life is better than a video game.
There's a great World War One game that came out that was a platformer. It was very recently, like in the last 4 years or so. That was about like the horrors of World War One without being explicit about the horror. I mean, you could just dig into just how disgusting the battlefields were in World War One. It was the most gruesome war ever.
Trench warfare.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, yeah. But this game was like enriching and it was engaging and interactive and yet you're still learning throughout it, but it doesn't feel like you're playing a school game, you know what I mean?
Oregon Trail.
Yeah, no doubt.
Very gruesome, right?
A little bit.
Right, but so it's all depends on the context. When I get my students, especially like I teach a lot of younger females because of the nature of the media business and people trying to get into it, you know, they're all obviously focused a lot on the misogyny and I'm fine with that.
Yeah.
Because that's a good critical issue to sort of tackle and think about.
Yep.
Like put on your critical lenses and be like, okay, let's talk about this as a problem.
Yeah, especially if you're a woman gamer, which I'm a bit remiss that we don't have that voice right now as a part of this conversation because
doing service.
Well, yeah, but I mean like any female that enters a gaming community has to deal with such
harassment,
toxic 65%.
Right. Yeah. 65% plus women get harassed online.
Yeah.
In recent research.
I remember reading this one really great article by a woman who wrote 65%. For a magazine and she was specifically test driving a VR game and testing out this new thing. And she was like, VR as a woman is terrible. Like, I didn't even get 5 minutes into this community and already people were coming up at me and like rubbing my character. Yeah. And like,
so gross.
Yeah. Like oh, cool. Guys. My VR experience is awesome. I get to watch your character rub against me. Cool.
Ew,
see ya.
So gross.
Yeah. It just doesn't make any sense, but it happened. It was a startlingly fast amount of, I mean, it's not really that surprising, but at the same time, she was even startled. Like, I didn't even think it would happen that fast.
I think it was 2 weeks ago in New York Times. That's one of my main news sources that I teach from. But like, there's a great opinion again about how we're teaching like boys really the wrong way and we're raising young men with these weird expectations and how you're not supposed to have feelings and mm-hmm. it hit me in a way as a young dad and as a teacher how we interact and so like you know what tools are we giving people so that they don't go rub against you like why is that a response
yeah.
why is that a response
yeah.
like what
gives you the joy in playing
right,
that game to do
so
that yeah.
awkward.
So imagine being a gay man
and
growing up,
right.
And you know you're gay, and you have to keep it to yourself, and you're like, what the fuck is wrong with me? Because all these guys are, like, rubbing on girls and doing all this other stuff,
right.
And I'm like, no, that's gross.
Yeah. You know? So,
right, but just that. As a human,
right,
regardless of your,
exactly.
you know, your gender.
Well, but especially in the gaming community, you
right.
got to hear
yes.
so many different slurs, homophobia, I mean,
well, exactly.
it, racism.
I mean, they just kicked off an Overwatch player, like, in the E-League Good. For, like, repetitive offensive.
Yeah, like
Dallas
a
team,
major league player.
Right?
Good.
Totally.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and they should.
Hey, we're going to talk about Super Smash Bros. When we come back.
All right, so this week's episode is brought to you again by Stillwater Brands, and it couldn't be a bigger fan of Stillwater. I'm sorry to the listeners out there who don't live in Colorado, because right now you can only really experience the greatness that is Stillwater in Colorado, but mark this down, when you come to Colorado to visit and you want to get your cannabis on, remember Stillwater, because these guys make incredible products. They've got the greatest teas, they've got an instant coffee called Clockwork, that's what I've been drinking throughout the whole episode, so if you notice me getting a little more progressively high and a little off the rails later on in the episode. That's why, probably. Or it's the joint I smoked. But regardless, Stillwater's great. They have some of the greatest sourced teas and they also have this really cool product called Ripple, which you can basically just put a water-soluble powder of THC into anything you're drinking or eating, which is fun. Peanut butter jelly, spaghetti and marinara sauce, soup,
Stillwater.
Smoothies. Anyway, check out Stillwater Brands. They're our favorites. Get into Colorado. Try it yourself.
Yo, yo, welcome back. It's Hugh Johnson, Brad Bogus, Richard Williams, and we are Nerd AF. We are here with Andrew Matranga, Denver University professor.
University of Denver professor.
DU.
This section of the show, we like to hand it over to the guests. And so
that would be
Andrew, what's your section of nerd? Obviously, we know you love the Star Wars, big time.
If that didn't come across in that deeper dive there into my love for the illustration of Ralph McQuarrie and the music of John Williams and now the writing of Dane Filoni, I don't know if I've done my job. So I do love Star Wars.
But you hate pod racing.
I hate pod racing. Not a fan. So, okay. I nerd out, obviously, on teaching journalism. I know, obviously, Brad here through his work with the cannabis and the marijuana journalism course that I created. I geek out on that big time. I teach that a couple times a year. And I also teach, though, a Star Wars class, which is what kind of brought me here today. I'm very fortunate that I get to teach a college class. I teach, like, the Lucas trilogy of THX and then Graffiti and then A New Hope. And then I introduce them to this larger universe. And we read a very good book. And then we study Joseph Campbell. So I nerd out on those things academically. And I actually was a magazine journalist at Backpacker Magazine and did GPS work. So I nerd out on maps. Cartography is like something I used to teach cartography classes. I love maps. So usually that's one of my entrees between Star Wars and being outside. I have so many geeky passions. I'm just a nerdy person.
Have you ever seen a map of the Star Wars
universe? Yes, I collect a bunch of them. And I have a slide. I have a slide. Yeah, good. Yeah, there you go. Like, rub that itch for me of maps. You know, the universe, there's a few different maps out there. I have a couple that I like. One I like a little bit more. I've saved them as links, and they're in my slide deck for my when I talk about the universe of Star Wars. Like, I show them the galactic map. But until, like, Disney puts out, like, an official one with, like, the actual shipping routes and, like, what is the Kessel Run? Like, where is Mustafar in relation to Hosnian Prime, et cetera? Like, one map, like, Mustafar and Dagobah are like a cab ride away from each other, and I'm like, no way.
Yeah,
no way. No way. Maybe they're like, there's some big ass thing and it's close, but it's like a huge trench. I don't know, but I'm like, there's no way. So some of the maps I dispute just sort of geographically, even though obviously we're talking about something that's not real.
So how far is Mustafar from Coruscant?
Well, it's on like a main channel though, and you look at this one map, it's like south and west, and it's over there by like Mustafar and a few of the other nastier planets out there is like in that realm.
Well, because that's a whole system, right? What did they call that?
Off the top of my head, I don't remember.
I don't remember.
Mustafar is the volcanic system for those who
are right. Right, right. Yeah, that's where you can get your legs burned off pretty bad. Right.
Yeah, and Dagobah is a swamp.
Ask Darth Vader.
Yeah, just ask Anakin, his punk ass. But really, though. And so that's what I love teaching. And also I produce a podcast, too, just like this one. You know, I work with a co-host, and we just have fun with it. We built a studio, and just, you know, audio engineering is fun. So that was my favorite class in film school. I worked with a guy named Stan Alton on a sound design class, and he helped do sound on a little movie we like to call Star Wars, right? Oh, when he's like, when Johnny and I were working on the thing, I'm like, no, I'm sitting in there, I'm like, when he said Johnny, he meant Williams. Oh boy, okay. Yeah, right. Like, he literally wrote the textbook. I still own it. It's one of the few that I kept from my undergraduate days. Stan Alton, like, you know, he worked on Jaws, done. You know, like that kind of personality. And so I do love the audio engineering. It's so fun, and you know,
audio is fucking hard.
It's hard.
God, it's hard.
It's hard.
Right. Yeah.
I have a hard time teaching it. Yeah. My students have a hard time performing it. Just the interview that I did the other day, you've got to edit it. It's all of it. So, but I geek out on those things pretty hard, and that's why I've been excited to come on your little talkie here.
So I want to know kind of your opinions, because everyone always has an opinion on journalism and the media. Everyone is an armchair quarterback in terms of how the media functions. They're either involved in like a conspiracy to do something altogether, or they're divided by money and nothing's real and everything's fake, especially now. How does journalism weather the storm? What can we expect moving forward? Does it become and does culture and sort of the things that we're talking about, media, entertainment, become more integrated into how that develops or not? I'm curious what your thoughts are.
A lot of questions.
Yeah, sorry.
The first one is that
I never just ask a simple question, I guess.
Well, and I sat on a panel Thursday night up at the Estes Library. They have a news literacy grant from the American Library Association, and I was lucky enough to be on a panel with Aaron O'Toole from KUNC, the guy who publishes the Estes Park Gazette, Polly Washburn, formerly of the Denver Post as well, superstar. And then the moderator was from CSU, and we were talking about fake news to these folks, and you know that part's really tough. And a lot of them were like, "What are we supposed to do? What do I believe?" And my answer is, well, you have to really use your own critical faculties and right. you know, take a minute and think about it. There is a conspiracy, though, to answer your question. There's mm-hmm. a conspiracy to tell the truth. And I think that that is the part that for people is very difficult right now, because truth and fact have become so differently weighted, and mm-hmm. that's not fair, especially to the people who perform this for a living, because the facts are of the facts of the case. The building burns down. Is it arson or not? Did somebody die or not? Did they die in the fire? Did they die in the hospital? Is there a payout? With blah, blah, blah. That's right. all of like the facts of the case. If you don't think that that either matters or is news, or if arson is actually a conspiracy, then we have a different understanding of what the, you know, the truth is. And that's where people's opinions come into play. And that's, a lot of people don't know how to consume the news right now to understand opinion versus reporting and, right. and facts. I think that's the bigger part.
And that's purposely being muddled in some
ways. Absolutely. Well, yeah. there's no newspapers really in the sense that there were before. And newspapers are packaged up with an A section with like local news, international news, regional yeah. news.
Right.
The, you know, editorial and opinion at the back, very dedicated area to say we endorse a candidate, we endorse this issue, the opioids are crazy. And then you have another person on the other side saying, I work for the Heritage Foundation and I support these principles X, Y, and Z. Obviously, that person is from the Heritage Foundation, and they're biased.
Yeah.
When you know that, and you can read that and understand that, you can share that more critically and with a better interpretation, as opposed to just saying, like, you know, thanks, Obama. You know what I mean? Which is what most people do. They're just like, see, look, thanks, Obama, you know, or whatever. Yeah. Or it's like, see, guns did this, or whatever. Maybe the guns mm-hmm. did do it, but maybe not. And a lot of people I don't know can read into the depth sometimes, and that's what I am concerned about for journalism.
This is a blessing and a curse, though. I mean, right. this time we're in, like you look at like some of the bigger name news agencies, New York Times, Washington Post, they're all like they're doing well a little bit,
sure.
like their profit margins are going up, so that's a good thing. Also, just need to support local journalism, support newspapers and stuff like that. I think that because of this attack, journalists are going that much harder to bring the truth.
The good ones are
yeah.
doing great.
And I mean, like Andrew said, you just have to be able to use your mind, use your resources, use your faculties to do your own independent research.
Right.
Just because, like, and this is a big one, just because someone can take, like, corporate money doesn't mean they have people, like, they don't have an agenda.
Yeah.
Like,
ideally.
You know, yeah. like, a lot of people who will often, like, give money to smaller news venues tend to be a little bit more extreme. So they expect to see a bit more extreme. Like agenda and coverage and representation.
Right.
So you have to just keep that in the back of your mind. Like, just because, you know, it's kind of a grassroots type of deal doesn't necessarily make it automatically good.
Right. Yeah.
They also don't know how hard it is to, like, do really well. I think that's the, to answer your original question, that
yeah.
people just don't know how hard, like any job, just no one knows how what any job is like, really, until you do it, you know? And so that's the hard part, I think, for some people to empathize with that.
And then piggybacking on that, you want to talk about a struggling industry. Like, talk about print journalism. Like,
yeah.
please, someone like, I don't know how, like Cole and all these other things are doing, but...
Right. No, yeah, that's a good point, right? Like,
we're doing pretty bad ourselves.
Yeah, like, print journalism, like,
you can
yeah,
win a
right.
Pulitzer and
bring
get
those
laid
jobs
on.
Back. Yeah. It's like the same thing. It's like, bring the print jobs back. It's like,
yeah.
well, yes
bring
and no.
Print back? Like
really? You know, you probably will have uphill sled on that, unfortunately, but yeah, right. Like,
yeah, like, steel makes the country?
Right.
What about, like, the fucking editorial,
yeah,
the journalism?
The
right.
yeah,
like, watch City Hall go unchecked for, like, 5 months in your local town and, like,
yeah.
see
and then
the
it
difference.
Turns out your mayor is an epic creep.
Ooh. Yeah, no doubt.
Sorry.
So we can stop right there. But
he's stepping out again.
I mean,
no, keep going.
Yeah, we could. But that's the journalism part. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to take it there. But
no, it's great.
You know,
no,
we wouldn't
good.
Know that stuff
you're
if
so
we
good.
Didn't have people being conspired to the truth and doing investigative journalism. And you know,
yeah.
I try to inspire students. It's difficult, but I also, you know, they're limited in time and what they want to do with their life, and they also do want to make money, and so there is that tension with them. And I do get to sort of speak from a lofty perch on that, but. That's that part of my brain that I wear related to Big J journalism and the pursuit there of education. But like I said, I definitely have some varied interests these days.
You also, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but you had the very first class ever taught in a university on cannabis and journalism, correct?
That's correct, too. Yeah, so my marijuana reporting class is fun, and students who have never taken journalism, they take it sort of as like again, it's another interterm. So I get students who aren't journalism students, they're like, I never knew about like all this stuff and like publishing and how to use Twitter and to talking to people and asking questions. And I'm like, oh, it's fun. And we like get to go meet you know, Julie, or go meet, you know, the staff at the cannabis, and they learn a lot.
Yeah.
It's I enjoy it.
So I have to bring the conversation back to Star Wars.
Yeah, yes, please do. Please do. Just, I actually feel like a little lost. Like, I'm not speaking nerdy enough right now.
Our nerds guys like skip.
Yeah,
skip.
Right. Welcome back, nerds. Welcome. We're going to talk about Star Wars because nerd.
Yes.
AF.
Nerd AF, baby.
Because love nerd it. AF.
I know you hate to prognosticate, but can you talk to us about episode 7, 8, 9,
why?
What you like so far? And what
all
would
of
you
it.
Like to
BB-8
see?
BB-8 is a legend. I mean, BB-8's amazing. He's like, he's got the thumbs up flame. He's a ball. He rolls around. I love BB-8. He's got a great relationship with Poe, who's kind of a tool. Definitely, again, watch how this should have ended. Please do.
Last Jedi or Force Awakens or both?
I haven't watched The Force Awakens. I should. I bet it's out there, but The Last Jedi was so good. So I do like... Well, I like that about it specifically, that the fan culture still exists, and like, just like with the robot chicken stuff, you know, you can laugh at yourself, and like, you can see funny little vignettes that are these new directors, like, it's a part of the larger culture that hopefully, now I think that you're, you know, the ring telephone joke at the beginning of, you know, your mama kind of, you know, your mama's calling, you know,
so
like, you know, that was bad, but like, at the same time, like, it reflects a larger culture, you know, of being able to laugh at yourself a little bit, and let's not forget how corny the first couple flicks were, you know, in 77 and 80 or whatever. And God, with the you know, the Ewoks. But so.
No, they're perfect religion.
Right, exactly. So you know, what I love about it is we're still talking about it. And we have a new, like, place to go with it.
Right.
I do, you know, I mean, let's face it, when Kylo Ren freezes that laser bolt in
that's
Facebook,
better.
Like, that was, like, kind of one of those things where you're like, okay.
Yeah.
You know, like, okay. There is, like, things that we can still mine. Like, oh, well, people would be like, well, we never saw anyone do anything like that. It's like, well, maybe, though, if you think about it, like Yoda, they fling shit away in the Clone Wars.
Right. Yep.
So,
catch lightning.
Right. Yeah. Whatever. Right. Like, they do stuff like that. So let's just not be too Catholic about it. But I do The Last Jedi. I mean, you know, it's hard. I'm still processing, as someone who grew up, like, Luke Skywalker is still my first and only major hero in my whole life. And so that is sort of one of those things. Other, you know, your dad, your uncle, whatever, grandparents. But I mean, like,
but
the
narrative.
Right, they don't have lightsabers.
Right.
They don't fly planes. They don't destroy planets and things.
Yeah.
So, you know.
They hardly stack up.
Right. No offense, Mom. love you all. But, you know, the death of Luke Skywalker is one that we're all still sort of wrapping our heads around, and how that impacts the next story, and how what happens to Rey.
Right.
So there are these open ends, which are kind of nice. And,
and
you
do,
know,
do you think he's dead? Do you think that's what that was?
I mean, he
some
did.
People
he
seem to
he's gotta be gone.
He faded away. I mean,
so,
let's force ghost this guy and move on.
Yeah,
force ghost the guy and let's move on.
Yeah.
Let's just he force ghosts out of the place. Mic drop, and we can let this new group. Who knows what the time that passes in between? I mean, they could do the cop out kind of, you know, montage to start, like, since we last saw you, you know, or are they going to drop in, like, right away? You know what I mean? Like, the big question is how much ground are they going to fast forward? And how much character development are we expected to see before that last movie? Also,
right.
It's J.J. Abrams, so, like... Mm-hmm.
Explosions?
How do you feel?
Yeah, like, explosions.
How do you feel about J.J. Abrams coming back to it?
I don't know. I mean, when you look at the original six movies, I mean, it's mostly all George Lucas. I mean, but there are, of course, Kasdan and writers that were involved in those. It is more of a team effort, I think, than maybe before. And, like, again, how much role does Dave Filoni have as sort of the chief creative storyteller? And then Leland Chee, the Holocron Keeper. That's an official job title at Lucasfilms. His name is Leland Chee. He's the Holocron Keeper. Literally, he, like, sits in front of a FileMaker database and, like, enters data about Star Wars. It looks like the greatest thing ever. So, but depending on what those two guys do, Filoni and Chee, and how they allow Abrams to play off of the Johnson script, and what Disney sort of mandates, let's face it, they still have to say. I don't prognosticate in the sense, like, who is going to – they're new characters that have to be involved.
Right.
Yeah.
We have to replace
Ahsoka?
Some princess. Yeah, Ahsoka. Ahsoka. You know, what happens post Leia? You know, there's a serious sort of brain drain then, really, when you look at the talent pool.
Mm-hmm.
And do they have to mind the past? Or, I mean, how do you just insert a new character other than Rey, who, what's her role? You know, so, I mean, the best tour, more power to Rey, for sure.
This is going to be probably one of the nerdier things I'll ever say, but I really hope they actually talk about the Kyber crystals in a fucking movie, because they keep, like,
to read about them,
showing them,
yeah,
but they don't even talk about them.
The Rogue One catalyst book is phenomenal.
Oh my god!
And then the Tarkin novel is also phenomenal. Those two books talk about that time period and kyber crystals and the role they play and Galen Erso so deeply, and we learn a lot through the novels, but not enough, you're right, in the book, because kyber crystals could be as big as this room.
Yes.
And that's really how they built the, I mean, basically the Death Star is a big lightsaber.
Right. Yeah.
Right, we know right. that now, right? Yeah. It's just a giant laser sword. So you have to read the books for that. That requires a little bit of nerddom.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, like in just in general.
And it doesn't seem like it would be really hard for, I mean, I think like 30 seconds of explanation.
We got a little bit in Rogue One. They were mining crystals.
Well, you saw it happening. You saw her wearing one. Yeah, but no one called it a kyber crystal.
Right.
You have to be in the know.
You have to be a super dork about this stuff.
I have to say the Darksaber, I don't know why. I keep going back to I just
the dark saber from Mandalore.
You're talking about the black lightsaber?
Yeah. Mandalore. I want to know everything about it.
Right.
I have no
Wikipedia.
Idea.
It's so good. Look at the entry for the dark saber.
Okay.
It's amazing. Right. And the whole pre-Vizsla thing, which is ironic because Jon Favreau, the new director for the animated, was the voice of pre-Vizsla. So that he was the guy who carried the dark saber. That was the main character at that time. Right. So there's some narrative arcs that are connecting.
A couple of people carried the dark saber.
Yes.
So.
Yes.
Anyway, I'm really excited.
You should be.
I love and I love Mandalorians. It's like I love how they their armor was to fight Jedis.
Right.
Like seriously, like they would come at them and it's like boom, like a grappling hook would come at them and what have you. And I was just like, they built this armor to fight the Jedis. I'm like, how amazing is that? Anyway, and I'm kind of wondering if
someone had ever told me about that, about Boba Fett, I might have liked him a little more.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
No one told me that shit. Right. You gotta stand out in the back of the toy box.
Yeah. It's true. And you got to watch those early, a lot of that Clone Wars stuff, which is fun. So anyway, thank you for bringing me on for like the Star Wars geek side of things. There's a lot to talk about there, and we will all actively be watching, and I'm psyched to dig into like podcasts about this stuff now too. I just started listening to some, so like there's just so much content to consume. It makes me really happy.
You'll be back.
I know. I hope so. I'm almost done with Bloodlines. I'm going to be reading the Lost Stars books next. There's some good novel treatments coming out, and there'll be a lead up. Of course, there's a book out usually before the next movies. I love the young adult stuff that they're writing, because they try to lead up into the new movie, the new feature films, with a bunch of sort of offline content that is canon, which we have to know about to understand the story a little bit better.
Yeah, I mean, you're literally a Star Wars professor now. We're going to have you on to talk about Solo. Yeah.
That literally makes you a woke Jedi.
I thank you. I appreciate that.
Can I be your Padawan?
I feel like I'm learning more from you tonight. Yeah. I love talking Star Wars.
I feel like we need to add Darth Vader to this list.
Yes, exactly. So we're going to move on. In honor of the Super Smash Bros. Trailer, if you did not see it, it features some characters from the first-person shooter Splatoon going around, pew, 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 shooting each other, and then boom, they look off into the distance, and it's the Smash symbol, and then we get a little white screen that says 2018. Yes, indeed. For the Nintendo Switch. So in honor of that, we're going to do a little Smash Bros. Celeb Deathmatch with all nerd characters, any character from any medium, any universe.
In case you don't know what Super Smash Bros. Is and you live under a rock, it's a game that Nintendo came out with a long time ago.
Pointing at himself.
Major favorite at the end of the 90s, back in college, but it's basically like a four-person player smashed together with a bunch of different characters from all over Nintendo games, and so basically Super Smash Bros. Is a bunch of different characters you love to play in video games coming
Nintendo
together and fighting.
Nintendo characters, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, and 8 players last time locally. That was sick.
Oh, snap, yep.
All right, so we've got Storm from the X-Men.
Yeah.
We have Son Goku.
What was that?
Fucking love that.
From Dragon Ball. We have Legolas from Lord of the Rings. We have Merlin from history and Disney.
From history.
More Disney.
That's right. Merlin's
hate
real
on
history.
It all you want. It owns our childhood.
Fact.
Yeah. Superman from DC. Existence. Carnage, I believe, from Spider-Man, correct?
Yep, Spider-Man.
Marvel, I guess. Wonder Woman from DC. Spock from Star Trek. And Darth Vader.
Oh.
Nice, you brought it. I'm sorry. You got to bring it. Bring that.
All right, so we're going to take Team 1 here first. Storm versus Goku versus Legolas versus Merlin. Who wins?
Oh, so it's going to be one winner out of the four.
Yeah, and then we're going to have a
yep,
a,
just okay. a
playoff.
Storm, Goku,
Do you guys want to do it differently or what?
No.
Okay.
Well, I mean, Legolas is going to die. He's dead. I mean, he's cute, he's but...
Dude, you don't shit. Think Legolas can step on lightning and, like, just...
No. I think he could step on a shield and, like, on a stone, but I don't know about lightning. I never saw him step on lightning. Yeah, he didn't do it.
He's cute.
He just shoots some arrows.
That's just me joking about how OP he is.
Yeah, he's a piece of trash.
I like wizards. I like wizards, so I mean, I gotta.
You're go going Merlin,
yeah?
Just,
that's my pick.
Do we even know the limit to Merlin's powers?
I don't know.
I mean,
he has a lot.
It doesn't matter what you turn Goku into. I'm just saying, we saw Majin Buu turn Vegito into a piece of chocolate, and he still kicked Majin Buu's ass.
Vegito.
So, Goku's gonna win.
I defer. All right. So out of that bracket, we have Goku. So now we have a five-team bracket. Then what does that mean?
I'm sorry.
It's okay. You're good.
That was fine. Hilarious. Yes. How do you? I mean, all right. So
Storm. I know what that word means.
So you got Superman, Carnage, Wonder Woman, Spock, and Darth Vader.
The Lasso of Truth.
Wonder Woman
is like indestructible, right?
Truth.
How does she
truth?
She is
the theme
Timmy
was
guy.
Truth.
What's
yes.
her weakness?
Yeah,
how does
from
she
a
die?
Planet?
You take off her. She doesn't.
Hold on. You almost said something specific. Like, what does she have? Like armor that's
she
magical.
Doesn't. You take off her bracelets, probably.
Yeah.
Okay, so she just take off some jewelry and she's fucked up. Carnage could probably take off her jewelry with his suit.
Right.
No.
Okay. Superman.
Only a god could take him.
No, we know how to kill Superman. Spock could kill Superman because he just needs to get, you know, access to some materials.
Right. What about Darth Vader? He's kind of the dark horse in this fight.
No pun intended.
Yeah.
Dark horse. I mean, he's got the force powers, of course.
That's true. Could he just stop all of them from doing what they're doing?
Like, no. Exactly. Like, could he stop Superman's X-ray vision, like Kylo Ren stops the laser? Just like...
She would rip off his arms.
Could, like, all right, so if Darth Vader's lightsaber hits Wonder Woman, what happens? Does it just bounce off of her?
Well, yeah. She has the bracelets. It's like, boom, lightsaber.
Oh, she just bing, bing?
Yeah.
Unless Carnage takes her bracelets. No. Oh, well, I guess we're going Wonder Woman, right?
Yeah.
Is that the winner here?
Only a guy.
So how does
Wonder Woman beat Superman? Like Superman's...
Well, I know how, because Wonder Woman has magic, and her powers are based on magic, and Superman, his weakness is magic as well as kryptonite. So Wonder Woman will always kick Superman's ass. Always.
So Wonder Woman
that was
advances.
Definitive.
I don't feel passionate.
So now Wonder Woman beat Goku.
Versus Goku. Wonder Woman versus Goku.
What's Goku's weakness?
Does he have one?
Like, I don't know.
I guess food.
I know,
like,
you're
you
know.
Can catch him off guard.
You know.
like that's literally
it's
his
like,
weakness.
Does he?
He like sometimes spaces out.
So Wonder Woman.
So Wonder Woman wins
on the Smash Bros. Celeb Deathmatch.
Oh, I mean, I don't know about that. What if Goku goes Ultra Instinct?
I don't know. What about Storm? You know,
well, she already died, dude.
She's already gone.
Goku
man.
Killed her.
Why you gotta kill her?
I mean, it's Deathmatch. Deathmatch.
Black Panther gonna be mad.
Yeah. T'Challa's coming.
Right, T'Challa. He was married to her and shit.
So we're thinking.
Wonder Woman, Goku. All right, so give me some powers here, and I'll
Spock just has a death grip.
Spock's dead.
Spock's dead. So okay. Just Wonder Woman versus Goku. All
right.
So you've got magic.
But she's a demigod.
Okay. But she just loses her...
Goku fights Destroyer Gods on the
ring. She can die, right?
Don't quote
me. He destroys gods on the ring.
I mean, he fights Destroyer Gods on the ring.
Don't quote me on that. So.
Like,
I think
he's
Goku
fighting
wins.
A bunch of gods right now. He just mastered the technique.
Well, she has a lasso of truth.
Gods have trouble mastering.
She has a lasso
of
truth.
He has a lying problem. He kills gods.
No, but it also, the lasso of truth also, you could do suggestion.
You're a third-party observer here. Who do you think wins in this matchup?
Go ahead.
You've heard both the sides.
You call it.
She could suggest
let me just explain Ultra Instinct to you. It's the mastery of movement.
Wonder Woman. Science just has to be there.
Wonder Woman's the winner.
All right. The year 2018, I don't know.
Right.
It's a combination of forces.
Let's be woke. Stay woke.
She had to go through four other competitors? I don't know.
Hashtag nerd woke.
She beat Superman.
She did beat Superman. That's
true.
A tougher competition.
All right. Andrew, thank you so much for the wonderful discussion, and thank you for joining us today.
Thank you.
Also, thank you to the audience for joining. Plugs. plugs. What are we nerding out about this week?
I am here to nerd out about Star Wars.
I think definitely Wrinkle in Time. Looking forward to seeing that. Possibly going to see Annihilation on Thursday. So that's going to be pretty exciting. I'm, of course, still nerding out on Elder Scrolls because I've got quite a few more hours to dump into that.
I didn't actually get to play over the weekend. I'm really sad.
Oh, I might get some special crown crates for killing creatures this weekend. That's something I did.
Woo!
I've got a great life, guys. Go on.
Okay. Annihilation. I'm going to see it this Thursday, so I'm totally excited about that at Alamo Draft House, Sloan's Lake. We love you. Nope, that wasn't a plug, right?
They're not paying for anything. You just really like them.
I really do. And let's see. I am playing both Injustice 2 as Black Lightning and The Evil Within, too. Mm. Those are my two right now. I'm loving it. So, anywho.
Got a shout-out, Luke Cage. Been watching that all
week.
Yeah.
Oh, Jessica Jones, too.
I'm getting on it. I'm finally getting back into watching things
Luke
now.
Cage is good.
But Luke Cage is fun, man. Like, Sweet Christmas. Is it fun? He says that all the
time. Season 2 is coming out.
Season 2 is coming out.
That series actually turned me on to an artist named Jadena. Uh-huh. He does that Hail to the Chief song in the nightclub. Dude, you got to listen to Jadena.
Okay.
That shit's good.
Oh, yeah. I know that song.
Like, yeah.
Banging.
Yeah, dude, it's really good.
And, yeah, that's it for me.
Right on. So.
Thank you very much for having me. I appreciate it.
Thanks for coming.
Thank you, Andrew.
Yes, there is more Star Wars to talk about.
always. We hope to have you back soon.
Yes, sir.
All right, thank you for joining us today. For Brad Bogus and Richard Williams, I'm Hugh Johnson, and we are out. Thanks.
Nerd AF is a production of F420. We are produced by Vince Chandler and Andy Caldwell. We are hosted this week, as we are every week, by Richard Williams, Hugh Johnson, and the one and only Brad Bogus. Thanks again to Andrew Matranga for appearing on the show. Check out Stillwater. We love you. Bye.